The Biological Jew by Eustace Mullins, Part 2. Lepage classifies as temporary parasites those insects such as mosquitoes and leeches which suck the blood of the host. He names them ectoparasites because they do not enter the body of the host. Other lice, which live beneath the skin of their hosts, are classified as endoparasites. There are also hyperparasites, who live off of other parasites, the rabbinical dynasties, and brood or social parasites, which are found in ant and bee families, and which live off of the community. Lepage points out that every animal, whatever its mode of life, is gradually altered by the slow processes of evolution. He says that the parasite, far from being an exception to this rule, actually exemplifies it. Quote, it develops teeth with which to rasp the tissues of the host, sucking apparatuses to suck its juices, coagulants to hold onto the host body. The remarkable cunning with which some kinds of blood-sucking bats stalk their victims and steal their blood must also be reckoned among the modifications which their temporarily parasitic habits have produced. Species of Desmodus attack cattle, horses, and other animals, including man and poultry, when they are asleep at night. They watch their victims carefully, and when they are asleep, they walk or sidle up to them and scoop out a piece of flesh so delicately that the sleeping animal often is not aware of the bite until the bleeding is discovered in the morning. Close quote. One of the specialized modifications of the Jew is his ability to suck the blood of the Gentile host without alarming his victim, weakening it without being discovered, through the highly sophisticated and refined instruments and techniques which the Jew has developed over a period of centuries for these specific purposes, and which have no counterpart in any other species. In view of these techniques, need we be surprised that some of the Gentiles who have been most weakened by the bloodlettings of the Jew are among his most vociferous defenders, and who will fight to the death to protect their Jewish benefactors. They are totally unable to recognize their danger or the insidious nature of the parasitic attack. Lepage describes a type of parasite called the hagfish, which is classified as one of the cyclostomes, a name whose origin refers to the circular opening inside their mouths. He says, quote, all of these fishes have a worm-like shape, and perhaps the best known of them is the lamprey. The hagfish has two rows of teeth on its powerful tongue and one median tooth upon the roof of its mouth. Its eyes are very important and are buried beneath the skin, probably because the hagfish burrows deeply into the tissues of the fish which it attacks, so that its eyes have become useless. For the same reason, its gill openings are connected by long tubes to a single opening on the surface, much further back than the gill openings of the lamprey, so that the hagfish can breathe water while its head end is buried in the body of the fish upon which it is parasitic. Some species of hagfish can attach themselves so firmly by means of their sutorial mouths to the living fish that these fish can only rarely shake them off. They then rasp off the flesh of the fish and suck their blood. Some species of them consume the fish muscle until little is left of the living fish, except its bones and viscera, and the fish dies. Close quote. Thus, Lepage offers a complete contradiction of the definitive and scholarly article of the Encyclopaedia Britannica on parasitism, which contends that the parasite is never fatal to the host. The activities of the hagfish in sucking the blood of the still-living fish until it dies closely corresponds to the ancient Jewish religious rite of ritual murder, in which the healthy Gentile victim is strapped down onto a table, ritual cuts are made into his flesh, and the flowing blood is drunk by the celebrating Jews in one of the most important symbolic acts of their parasitic existence. The ceremony of blood drinking continues until the Gentile victim expires in a social reenactment of the physical activities of such parasites as the hagfish. Here we see the close correlation between the activities of parasites in the plant and animal kingdoms and those which have developed through the centuries of human civilization. Lepage states that many leeches combine organs of attachment with organs of suction, but others have only organs of attachment, such as the hooklets developed by many kinds of parasitic animals, which are attached either to the exterior or to the internal organs of the host. In the same way, when the host people of a Jewish community of parasites attempts to dislodge it, they find that the parasite has extended specialized tentacles of attachment deep into every facet of the host people's life. So deeply rooted are these tentacles that the dislodgement is not only difficult, it is such a demanding and painful operation that the dislodgement itself may be fatal to the host. The host finds that its mortgages are held by Jewish bankers, its children are being taught by Jewish teachers, its government is being administered by Jewish advisors or consultants, who, even if they hold no elective or appointive office, still make the important decisions. They turn for solace to their religion, and they find that Jewish converts, aided by appropriate gifts of money, have entered into the offices of their denominations and have risen rapidly until the religious beliefs have been altered to embrace all the tenets of the parasitic community of the Jews. What, then, does the Gentile host have left? The seemingly inevitable doom of being slowly bled to death, after which the parasites will leave the body of their victim and seek another host. Lepage points out that in many instances, the adult phases of the parasite do not move much about the host's body because they are surrounded by food and can obtain it without the help of locomotive organs. Thus, we find that the Jews are not much interested in the transportation industry, preferring the more sedentary occupations. The parasitic community actually can and does become completely immobile in the host for long periods of time because it is characterized by the ability of dormancy, of lying without moving through the years while losing none of its potency. We find that ticks bearing infectious diseases can remain in the ground for as long as 100 years, and when they emerge, they are still infectious. Jewish communities have established themselves in Gentile nations and remained for hundreds of years without exhibiting any signs of being dangerous to their hosts. But if the Gentile host attempts to dislodge them, they immediately rise to the challenge and bring into play their specialized modifications for remaining upon the host. Lepage points out that parasites are naturally inclined to lead a sedentary life and undergo the modifications to which this mode of life leads. As a result of their parasitic mode of life, the Jewish communities have developed sedentary habits, which in turn have led to certain diseases directly attributable to this sedentary life, and which have been known for their high incidence among the Jews. Thus, diabetes is referred to in many medical dictionaries as the Jewish disease. Diabetes occurs principally because the sedentary and parasitic life prevents dudes from burning up the excess blood sugars which they ingest in their diet and which are intended for use in direct forms of energy. This causes a surfeit of sugar in the system, which becomes the disease of diabetes. Also, generations of sedentary persons cause malfunctions or the gradual weakening of the pancreas and other organs which are responsible for controlling the level of blood sugar. Thus, diabetes becomes a hereditary disease among generations of sedentary people. The Jewish community has developed a number of degenerative types of disease, such as blood disorders, cancers of various kinds, and other forms of physical degeneration, which are directly attributable to their mode of parasitic existence and to the physical degeneracy which it produces. As they cohabit with the Gentile community, and as their sedentary mode of life becomes more widely practiced, these degenerative diseases begin to appear throughout the host community. In one of the most important physical correlations between the Jewish community and the known types of parasitic organism in the plant and animal kingdoms, Lepage says, quote, "Among other organs, which are often reduced or lost when parasitic life is adopted, is the nervous system. It may be reduced as a whole, or the reduction may affect chiefly the eyes and other organs. Organs of special sense are best developed in active animals, which feed upon other animals and need to defend themselves against their enemies. They are not required by parasitic animals, which live a relatively sheltered existence on or inside the bodies of their hosts amidst a relative abundance of food." Close quote. The effect of a parasitic mode of existence upon the nervous system, which can be observed in many types of parasites, are especially noteworthy in the Jew. The degeneration of the nervous system into a state of severe mental illness in an average of 30% of all Jews has long been supposed by sociologists to be due to the physical inbreeding in the Jewish community, but the high incidence of mental illness in Jews whose families have intermarried with Gentiles is the same rate as those who have remained within the Jewish community. This points to a strictly biological origin of this degeneracy of the nervous system and bears out Professor Lepage's contention that the leading of a parasitic mode of existence inevitably leads to a reduction or a degeneracy of the nervous system. One of the most striking observations which Lepage has made in this study of animal parasites is his discovery that, quote, "Because this mode of life tends to cause a loss of skeletal structure resistant enough to be preserved as fossils, we have little geological evidence of the past history of parasitic animals. At least six species of fossil roundworms, however, have been described. Two of these, Hydonius antiquus and H. matutinus in the Eocene lignite, and the other four in Baltic amber." Close quote. The effortless existence led by the parasite not only affects its nervous system, which like any other physical attribute tends to atrophy when not used or required by the animal, but it also leads, over a period of time, to extensive skeletal changes in the structure of the animal, tending towards a soft, amorphous bone structure, which soon disintegrates after the death of the parasite. Here is another remarkable correlation between the life cycles of parasitic animals and the life cycle of the Jew. Because of their parasitic mode of existence, the Jews have left no artifacts which could be discovered among the ruins of ancient civilizations. even though they are known to have been present for long periods of time during these civilizations. Despite the historical records of their presence, we can find no concrete artifacts signifying their existence. Because we have heard, and still hear, so much about the great Jewish cultures of the past, archaeologists have made extensive efforts to discover some examples of Jewish art and sculpture and architecture in ancient cultures, the solid evidences which survive the ravages of time and natural catastrophes. Yet they found nothing. The sole results of these searches are a few pieces of crude water pots, fashioned from mud, which a Stone Age man could have produced with his bare hands, since he did not know the use of the pottery wheel, which made its appearance among early civilizations. These scanty evidences of the great Jewish past is but one more witness to the biological parasitical existence which the Jew has always led as a soft, amorphous, and rootless creature, feeding at the expense of others and leaving no concrete artifacts to memorialize his presence. Lepage says, quote, "Human writings about some species of parasitic animals take us back to the earliest records of man. The Egyptian papyrus from 1600 BC refers to tapeworms, blood flukes, and hookworms of man." Close quote. Thus, the biological parasite has been a problem of man since the dawn of recorded history. Although humans have been aware of the physical discomfort and danger which animal parasites have always presented to him, they have consistently failed to recognize the specific danger of the Jewish parasite until it was too late. Lepage says, quote, "The parasitic animal has to contend with difficulties and risks to which non-parasites are not exposed. It may have gained shelter and abundance of food, but it has obtained these at the cost of partial or complete dependence upon its hosts. The parasitic animal must find it and get into it or on its surface, and it must maintain itself in these situations." Close quote. Thus, the Jew encounters several dangers which do not ordinarily imperil other types of communities. Foremost among these is the danger of genocide, of actions against its community as a group, when the host discovers that its presence is endangering its health. The Jew is the only human group which has repeatedly undergone mass actions or pogroms against it. Because of its parasitic mode of existence, the Jewish community made no effort to develop a nation or an independent state during thousands of years of recorded history. This means that the Jew had no standing army for his defense against enemies. When a Jewish state, Israel, was finally established, the nation's budget identified it as an extension of the parasitic community, for 70% of its national budget consisted of contributions from abroad and 30% from the sale of bonds, which of course were worthless and which would never be paid off.
You're tuned in to Radio Stormer on the DailyStormer.com.
Because of its total dependence upon the Gentile host, the Jewish parasite develops a deep hatred and a contempt for the animals which provide it with food and shelter. This hatred is a protective frame which acts as a shield for the Jewish community and prevents it from accepting the life and goals of the host people for its own. Herbert Spencer may have been focusing upon the Jewish parasitic phenomenon when he wrote, quote, "If a group places a premium on the quality of enmity in contrast with that of amity, a criminal type evolves." Close quote. Since the Jew is the only group which places a premium on the quality of enmity, Spencer must have been making an oblique reference to the Jewish parasite. From the standpoint of the host people, everything that the Jew does is a manifestation of a criminal act, but from the parasite's standpoint, he is only following the procedures of his life cycle, which have evolved and been established over a period of thousands of years. Conflict comes from two separate and irreconcilable codes of ethics, that of the host, which places a premium upon decency, honour and self-reliance, and that of the parasite, which operates from an established modus vivendi of parasitism. The Jew lives in constant fear of rejection, of being thrown from the host, which would mean his starvation and death. As a result, the Jew sees everything in the light of how he relates to the host, or how he maintains his parasitic situation. The adaptive modifications of the parasite are attempts to anticipate possible changes in the host. Lepage says, quote, "Other parasites correlate their life histories with that of the host, the monogenetic fluke, Polystoma intergerimum, which lives in the bladder of the common frog, ignores all tadpoles which have not yet reached a stage of development in which they can survive in them, but when it meets with one that has, its aimless behaviour ceases. It seems to pause and await its opportunity to dart through the spout-like opening into the bag around the internal gills. How it knows the tadpole has reached this stage of internal development, we do not know, but perhaps it is helped by its eye spots and its nervous system, or by chemical substances secreted by the tadpole into the water which stimulate the Myracidium larva." Close quote. The extrasensory ability of the parasite to spot a suitably developed host has always been characteristic of the Jews. From earliest history, he has made unerringly for the most advanced and the most promising civilizations, ignoring the more backwards or undeveloped peoples. Thus, we do not find the Jew sharing the Spartan existence of the pygmies in the Aturi rainforest. He is living in a comfortable apartment in New York, dining on caviar and champagne. Lepage observes that the timing of the release of the parasitic animals' reproductive phases so that they may infect the host is also shown by some species of protozoa which live in the rectum of the frog. Here again we note the affinity of the parasite for the excretory organs, the previously mentioned Polystoma intergerimum, which resides in the bladder of the frog, and the protozoa, which prefer the rectum of the frog as the most suitable environment for its life. Lepage states that the dormancy of parasites is a continuously observed phenomenon, retaining their potency during many years of inactivity and isolation. Thus, a community of Jews may live torpidly in its ghetto for centuries, seemingly self-absorbed in its own parochial existence and having little effect upon its Gentile host until some combination of factors will cause it to become furiously active. In a short time, it permeates every aspect of the host people's existence and brings it to the point of destruction. The community of Jews in the Frankfurt ghetto of Germany is a good illustration of this type of parasitic dormancy. It remained dormant for 300 years, and within the span of a single generation, produced a group of bankers and traders who soon won control of the destinies of Western civilization. Lepage points out that the parasites cause defensive reactions in the host against a parasitic invader, such as efforts to localize and neutralize the injurious effects of the parasite, attempts to repair the damage done, and efforts to kill or to remove the parasite. He describes these as tissue reactions, and these are primarily local reactions, but more advanced reactions, such as a resistance immunity, may be developed by the host as the reaction of the entire organism. He says that tissue reactions are inflammations caused by bacteria, viruses, and inanimate agencies, and may be acute or chronic. They are the results of injury or irritation caused by organs or teeth of the parasitic animal, by its migration through these tissues, or by chemical substances which it secretes or excretes into the body of the host. The page goes on at some length to describe the various types of damage which the parasite inflicts upon the host. He says that in addition to these various tissue damages, parasites introduce other types of parasites into the host, as well as dangerous viruses. The parasites may produce substances which are injurious to the host, toxins or other kinds of poisons. In effect, then, the parasite begins to exercise a dangerous influence over the life cycle of the host, one which goes far beyond the simple goal of remaining attached to the host and obtaining food from it. Whether the parasite consciously intends it or not, it gradually becomes the most important single influence in the life of the host. The story of the newspaper business in the United States is a typical example. A century ago, newspapers were small and insignificant in this country, while the profession of journalism ranked only slightly above the profession of rat catcher and garbage hauler. As the Jews began to assume a more prominent role in the life of the Gentile host, they found that newspapers were an essential vehicle for their goals. They began to flood everyone with newspapers, and the newspapers became virus carriers of various forms of mental poisons and toxins, which either stupefied, confused, or paralyzed the Gentile host, putting it into a state of suspended animation as long as these venoms could be maintained. As Lepage points out, the parasite introduces other types of parasites into the host. We find that when the Jews obtained control of the United States Immigration Service in the 1890s through such Jewish commissioners as Strauss and Cohen, the gates were opened for a flood of Jewish immigrants from the ghettos of Europe, most of whom had been excluded previously on grounds of illiteracy, criminal backgrounds, and various forms of physical contagions or mental illnesses. Lepage also says, quote, "Parasites may cause biological changes, such as species which cause changes in the host's reproductive glands, parasitic castration, such as the parasitic crustacean Saculina, which destroys the reproductive organs of the host. The short-tailed spider crab, Inachus mauritanicus, which is attacked by Saculina neglecta. The effects of Saculina cause 70% of male crabs to acquire some of the secondary sexual characteristics of the female. The abdomen of these males becomes broad. They may acquire, in addition to their male copulating styles, appendages modified to bear eggs, and their nippers become smaller at the same time." Close quote. It is inevitable that the enormous effect which the parasite has upon the host would result in some biological alterations, such as the effect of Saculina upon Inachus mauritanicus. We have seen in America, during the past quarter of a century, coincident with the great power attained by the Jews in every walk of life, startling modifications in the appearances and habits of American males, as well as a vast increase in the public practice of male homosexuality. American males have taken on some of the secondary sexual characteristics of the female, and they have shown amazing declines in such primary male characteristics as energy, aggressiveness, and physical strength. Traditional roles of the sexes have also undergone sweeping changes due principally to Jewish agitation for sexual equality. This campaign has not resulted in sexual equality, since this equality could only be attained by eradicating all physical differences between males and females. However, it has resulted in a decline of masculine traits in the American male, as well as psychological confusion as to his role. This development can be equated with the pernicious influence which the parasite exercises upon the host, as Lepage describes the encounter of Saculina with Inicus Mauritanicus. Here again, we note the remarkable activity and influence of the parasite in relation to the reproductive and excretory organs of the host.